president has been taking full credit for the positive economic numbers, saying that it was himself and former President Barack Obama who were the ones who put in the policies that got the economy turned around. Andy Puzder is a former chief executive of CKE Restaurants, and he tells Fox News why Biden is getting it wrong.
Look, when they took when Obama-Biden took office, the White House predicted that they'd have 4% GDP growth in 2009, 2010, 2000, through 2012. It never happened. They never had a year of even 3%. So really what Biden's saying is we had these great economic policies during Obama-Biden, but they really didn't produce growth until we elected Donald Trump.
And regarding the dollar, Puzner reminds us.
You know, the dollar has gotten a lot stronger because the Fed has reduced the money supply by reversing the quantitative easing, and they've increased interest rates, which strengthens the dollar. When you do that, you reduce exports because foreign countries can't buy our goods because the dollar is worth so much. It's harder for them to purchase with their currencies. That significantly advanced GDP growth when Obama was president. He still never hit 3%. And it's restricted GDP growth under President Trump. The last three quarters, if the Fed had just stopped raising interest rates last September, GDP growth would be about 0.3% higher. So you would have had 3.2% last year and 3.5% in first quarter of this year. So it's tremendously effective.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hey, it's Joe Peters, and we're going to do Real Estate Matters combined with 55 Plus, combined with General Interest today. And my guest is Carl Taylor, Esquire. That means he's a lawyer. So say hello, Carl.
Hey, how you doing, Joe? Thanks for having me.
Great. So, in effect, we try to cover a lot of things on the show and at the same time zero ourselves in on things that people are interested in. What they asked me to do up front is the weather, so I'm going to do that first and a few commercials, and then we'll get going. I've got to find the numbers they want me to play today.
Okay.
There we go. We're at number 13.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So, hey, once again, it's Joe Peters, and the official Android weather forecast is, it is 72 degrees. Today is, just so we get a timestamp, it is the 27th of May. We're going to have month end by the end of the week. It is a little after 4 p.m. It is 72 degrees outside. We're going to have a max of 77. Doesn't look like we're going to hit it with the cloud cover. Going to be 64 overnight, 79 tomorrow, 63 overnight. Some rain tomorrow, some rain again on Friday, 82 and 59. I think we're getting what the Midwest is seeing, but a day or two later and quite dissipated. And then Friday is going to be a sunny day, 77. Saturday, partly cloudy, 79. So looks like we're right on the edge of summer. I'm going to play a few commercials, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Chambers. Hey, it's Joe Peters back here with Carl Taylor. Say hello again, Carl, for a sound check.
Hi, Joe. Thanks again for having me.
I'm wondering if we could just pull that a little closer to you.
Can you hear me better now, Joe?
Yeah, I think that's better. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk a little about Carl's background. We're going to talk a little about the county and a little about how we both fit into it. Carl, where did you sort of grow up and go to school? Why don't you bring us forward from that point?
Sure. So I'm actually a Pennsylvanian.
So okay.
I grew up near Philly. I moved into New Jersey for law school back in 06, South Jersey. I went to Rutgers Law in Camden, and then I moved up here. I came out of law school in 09. It was the Great Recession. I took a clerkship with Judge Pacheca in Somerset County, and I'd never been to Somerset County before, and I'd never been to Hunterdon County before. I thought, being a Pennsylvanian, you guys just had Shores and 95 up to New York. I was very surprised to find an agrarian area up here close to kind of like Bucks County, close to like where I grew up.
So you grew up in Bucks County.
Well, Montgomery County, but Okay.
And migrated here over that period of time.
And we love it up here. I have two daughters.
It's God's country. I mean, it's just no prettier place to live. Pennsylvania has some very nice places, too. It's kind of hard to find work unless you go all the way down to Philadelphia in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So I say, you know, sort of like Lambertville is no man's land. You can't get to New York or Philly from it, but it's a great place.
Yeah, there's a lot of great places here. And also, there's a lot of really good outdoors. You know, you guys have done a great job with open space out here in Hunterdon County and Somerset County. And as somebody who enjoys hiking and stuff, you know, you get the Round Valley Reservoir local. You got the Musconecton Gorge, which is a great place to hike with the Highland Trails. And then you have, if you go a little bit further north, you have Delaware Water Gap, Appalachian Trail that goes, you know, through Sussex County and Warren County. So really a lot of really good places to do outdoor things here, too.
So those of you who are joining us late, because I forgot to click the video on, it's Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters, speaking with Carl Taylor from Carl Taylor Law, and today is the 27th, Monday, Tuesday, the 28th. I knew that. And it's a little after 4 p.m. in 2019. So Carl was bringing us up that he grew up in Pennsylvania. He went through school in Philly, and then he went over to Rutgers Law School in Camden, so came across the river. And he's migrated up. Where do you live at today?
I live maybe I shouldn't say too specifically doing divorce law, but I live here in Flemington Borough, pretty close to where we're at right now.
And,
My wife's in New Jersey, but she's from Burlington County. So
Got it. So, I grew up in Middlesex County, and then when I, through my marriage, we lived in Sarreville, which was a great place to bring up five kids because it was close to everything.
Wow.
And then got divorced a long time ago already. And Marilyn and I moved out here about 20 years ago. And we think it's God's country. It's just not convenient to go to some places like New York, but some people do it. She worked for Rutgers Medical, so that was in Piscataway. It was about a 26-mile, I think a 30-round trip. Not round trip, but 31 way with a little traffic. And it took her 40 minutes maybe. And it depends what time you got on a road kind of thing. If you got on before 7 o'clock, it was a half hour. If you got on after 7:15, it was an hour.
Yeah.
So you want to stay at a rush hour. So why we moved here was we wanted more of a bucolic lifestyle. We didn't want to be farmers, but we wanted to live in a country. And we started taking trips out here, and we said, you know, this is nice. This, I could see us living here. And at that point, I was doing sales on a countrywide basis, and I commuted at Newark Airport. So all I had to be is within an hour of an airport. That worked for me. And she, a little bit of grumbling to Rutgers and back, but now she's retired. And we never looked back. We never were sorry we came out here. It's a beautiful place to live. But I can understand it's a more difficult sell as far as commuting than it used to be. When we moved here, if you look at Hunterdon County, Redington, Raritan, Clinton Township, those four boroughs constitute half of our houses that sell. So if you just look, that's like Route 31 plus a mile, all the way from Clinton down to Flemington. And somewhere around 2008, where you said you hit your change in life as far as direction and location, we hit a change, and people didn't come this far anymore. They stopped at around 287, which is maybe another 15 miles to the east.
Well, Hillsborough, you know, became so developed, too, in Somerset
True.
County, where it used to be very agrarian. So you got a lot of people moving into Bridgewater and Hillsborough, right?
Yep. Hillsborough is still a red-hot spot. If you stay under 800,000 in Hillsborough, it probably sells the day it comes on. We don't quite have that here in Hunterdon. We are selling very briskly under 500. We've got a couple of problems with real estate where we have very short on inventory and a low end because we haven't built anything new in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very
to list our house then. You know, we'll help out the low end for you.
Okay. But we're overburdened. You get above 700,000, it's probably going to take a year or two to sell your house because we're not bringing the people out the way they used to. So I said they used to come to 287. Now they're coming about 15 miles from New York and stopping. It's getting harder and harder to bring people here that want to go back to New York each day.
Well, you know, I think what's nice about where we live is that it's equidistant between two large cities.
Yes.
But the problem is it's almost exactly equidistant. So it's like, yeah, we're convenient-ish to get to Philadelphia and convenient-ish to get to New York.
Right.
But if you were a little bit closer to either of those cities, it would be a lot easier in terms of commuting for people going to the city to work, you know?
Well, and people are just, especially the millennials, they want a more urban lifestyle. They want a more walkability. We don't have walkability here. You have drivability in Hunterdon County.
Yeah, and I'm 35, so I don't know where I fall anymore.
Just on the edge of the...
I try to pretend I'm not a millennial, but then people tell me I am. I don't know. So, but at any rate, I do find that, you know, there's a few things at work, right? You have... people trying to sell houses, and then my generation sort of came out when things weren't going that well. So student loans and the savings, it's harder to have that money stocked away to – like I'm still 10 years into my starter home here, and I'm probably going to end up dying in it. You know, like I'm probably not getting out. So, you know, there's that sort of that element of it too where it's because the student loans sort of replace mortgages. You know, every generation has their issues. You know, my parents bought their house in 72, and they only paid $30,000 for it or something,
right.
But they had 25% interest or something, you know, you know, 20% interest. So everyone has their issues, you know.
Well, where we're at right now from a real estate viewpoint, that's what I want to – not what I want to speak on all the hour, is that it's very interesting because we have a brisk market going on. It will probably be our best year ever. We have less inventory by almost 50% than we had just 7 years ago, and we're selling more houses. And the only reason we're doing that is we're selling them quicker. So people are lurking, and when a house comes on, it goes almost the day it comes on if it's nice and clean. High-end issues because we don't have people. My business spans both Hunterdon and Somerset, and my office is actually in Warren, Watchung area, and that's typical $1 million price point, but it takes us 8 months to sell a house over there. It peters out at about $1 million, too. We have a lot of vacancies over there.
Yeah, I was surprised that there's so many vacancies in the hills.
Yeah.
You know, even Bernardsville, Bedminster, you know, a lot of places that are very desirable, but, you know, these houses are, you know, at least $800,000 for most of them to start. So.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for it. 70% of all the houses in New Jersey don't have a child of school age in it. And 50% don't have two people in it. So you've limited 7 out of 10 people to buy those big houses. So it's gone away because we're not having children. We're not. Last year was the lowest in 27 years of birth rate per thousand. And it's getting easier not to have children. It's getting more expensive to have children. And what millennials started doing was getting married later, having children later. So we lost about a half a generation in the middle. Where they used to get 28, 29, get married. Now it's 38 before they get married, having children into the early 40s. A woman's usually a couple of years younger. And then they're having one, maybe two. So, okay, this poses problems to Ponzi schemes like Social Security, where we're counting on more people at the bottom continuously. I think it's going to be generally an issue going forward that we're not having as many children, but we just haven't sensed it yet because it hasn't happened yet in Hunterdon County. But we can see it in the school systems. We're now 22% population in our school systems at Hunterdon High School. And if you go and look at Somerset County, where they built all those apartments, they're not down at all. The mayor of Somerset County, Gloria, I'm trying to remember her last name. She's on the real estate board with me.
Are you talking about the Hillsborough mayor,
yeah.
Gloria McCauley?
McCauley.
Yeah.
She says, we built all those apartments. Schools are full again. So what happened, since we're not selling houses at the low end, people have the school loans to pay back and whatever. And I say that the school loan is equivalent of their new car payment. It's usually around $400 a month. They're renting because they can't find. Some are moving towards New York, which is another problem because it costs a lot more to live over there. So they're never coming back. They're never going to save enough money to come back because they're spending every cent renting and eating and drinking Starbucks for $8 a cup.
Yeah, Jersey City or, you know, yeah, some of the oranges, they're definitely seen as more trendy, I would say, amongst the youth.
And so the building community has responded to the thirst for rentals by building more rentals. And 65% of all building starts we had last year were rental-only properties. That means at some point we'll have a glut of them, but right now we don't have enough of them. And we're even seeing seniors saying the same thing as millennial. I want to be in a high-rise luxury, and I want to be able to walk downtown. They just don't want to be closer to New York. They want to be further from New York, but they want the same thing. So I'm half Polish. I can tell this joke. It's like a Polish bridge builder. We're building houses up here because we're jurisdicted to build on 1 acre and 3,600 square feet, and we're buying houses down here at 1,800 square feet and maybe in a high-rise if we can find it. So we have a total mismatch. It's like the scene in Animal House where the parade marched into the wall. They forgot to make the last right. We are not building what people are looking for, and people aren't buying what we're building.
Well, even for Flemington Borough, you know, I mean, because I was just up hiking in Connecticut, past towns like Kent, you know,
yeah,
places, you know, on the Appalachian Trail this weekend, and you see these really amazing small towns, and they don't have McDonald's and places, you know, they don't have like large.
Right.
It's mom-and-pop type stores, or at least,
yeah,
that's what they appear to be. But at the same time, you have a mom-and-pop grocery store, you have a bunch of good restaurants, and we have a little bit of that in Flemington, but not as much as we could, in my opinion.
Right.
And it's like, that's a shame that, like, you know, somebody who hopes to live and grow old, and of course technology will help, right, if I do live long enough, because
yeah,
Amazon will be, like, air delivering me food,
yeah,
probably at that point.
I think it'll be at your doorstep. You
yeah,
have to go to the
yeah,
computer.
Exactly. But you know, it would be nice if we had more of the ability to not have to go outside of Main Street to get everything we need, you know, as local residents. And
we've got some complex problems, okay?
Right.
I live near Clinton. I live on Beaverbrook in Annandale, which is a suburb of Clinton Township.
Yeah, that's beautiful there.
Downtown,
mm-hmm,
Clinton. Downtown Clinton is just what you said. We don't have a Starbucks. We don't have anything.
Yeah,
but
that's the kind
store
of town that Flemington,
yeah,
should be more like,
right?
Right. Or Doylestown, PA. You know, these towns that pull it off.
Flemington has got some plans to develop, put $80 to $100 million, but we've got these people saying, well, I want to save every brick. And
they told me when I moved in here 10 years years ago it was going to be developed.
Yeah, it's no closer.
Yeah.
I've had, I'm trying to think what his name is, the mayor that just went out of office up here several times, and it's passed. It's now held up in court.
Yeah.
And Phil Greiner.
Yeah.
Phil's a great guy, and mm-hmm. he lost only because there's so few people in Flemington. Most of them think save every brick, and Phil was thinking, let's rebuild
it. It's easy to be the opposition on any argument, because you just say that the other side's wrong with what they're planning to do.
Right.
But it's a lot harder to actually come up with ideas about what you're going to do. You know, I mean, that's really the hard thing.
Because it's interesting. I've attended several town meetings and listened to people say, if it was only a floor less, we could approve it. I'm saying, so let's make it a floor less.
Yeah.
Let's still do it. I don't think we're that far apart. I think the boisterous people, you probably don't remember, but Nixon used to say, not that he was one of my favorite presidents, it's the silent majority.
Well, think about 72 with McGovern, right?
I mean,
that's one of the greatest landslides of all time.
Yeah.
And that's Nixon before he ran into his troubles.
I think the few people make all the noise because most people think, so it makes sense, I'm not going to go to the meetings. And it's not happening. So it's held up, but it will happen. I believe from the people I've interviewed and talked to, it will happen. It's just going to take a couple of more years. And if you drive around and look at the back of the hotel, it's going to fall down all on its own. We don't have to push it over. It looks like the hotel and It's a Wonderful Life when you look at it from the back. The roof is caved in. It's got full of mold inside.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, look, I don't have a strong opinion on any of this stuff. I'm just a local divorce lawyer. But you know, when I saw, you know, when you hear things like, we got knocked down the Union Hotel. I mean, I could see both sides of the argument. But the problem is if you don't make a decision and just choose one of those, you're making a decision of doing nothing. And that's where the atrophy sets in.
You know? I was on last year to the committee of realtors to restock downtown Flemington stores. Let's find people to come in here. And one of the fellows, Ernie Tufos, and Coldwell Banker with me, said, it used to be cool. When I was a kid, downtown Flemington is where you go. Like the kids go to the mall now. They came to downtown Flemington. And then they put 78 through Clinton, and Clinton sort of stole it away. But Clinton never caught on. It's not a big town. It's just a little destination.
Here's the
town.
Thing, though, right? When you have a town like – and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but Flemington is a county seat.
Yep.
So like Somerville, which has done a better job. I used to live in Somerville 10 years ago, and I think it's developed a lot better than Flemington has over the 10-year span I've been here. But any county seat, you have all these county buildings and all these – governmental buildings that don't help the ratables. So you need local businesses and you need development to help offset the costs, because I'm paying, you know, $8,000 almost a year in property taxes for a $250,000 house.
Wow.
I mean, that's ridiculous, right? I mean, even as a Pennsylvanian, I find it egregious.
Well,
you know,
I'll give you a tip of story. This is so typical. I moved the woman from over behind ShopRite, which is called Flemington South, over to here right across from the Catholic Church. It's called...
Across from St. Mag's?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 years later, I get the phone call. She wanted to move over there because they wanted to walk downtown. So I come in. Her husband's getting transferred out to the island. And she says, remember we wanted to walk downtown? She says, guess how many times we walked downtown? I said, I'm almost afraid to ask. She said, twice, because we didn't think we saw it all the first time. There's nothing to walk downtown for.
Look, I have a collie, and I've walked that dog down Main Street thousands of times. Not as much recently, because so my dog will be mad at me. But for a period of time there, a few years, twice a day, three times a day, walking down Main Street. They try to put on events. That's great. And look, I used to be the prosecutor for the borough. So, and I live here. I love the borough. But you got to do something to draw people in, because if not, you know, I worry about my you know, the future of the town. I worry about, well, what are my kids going to do growing up? Like when they're teenagers and they're like, what is there to do here? I guess we'll have to go loiter at the 7-Eleven or something. Like, you know, I did growing up in PA. I mean, it'll be a Wawa in this instance. But, you know, I mean, there's really not a lot to do here. And, you know, some of the stuff they do, you know, Lambertville has an art scene that makes it kind of interesting.
Right.
Frenchtown has a similar kind of vibe. You know, you have to figure out what is the soul or the scope of this place, and what can you turn it into? And if it's more modern, then great. If it's preserving, then great. But let's just pick a path and do it.
One of the biggest things we had a problem with on this committee was parking.
Right.
Because no matter what you applied for, you had to pass the parking.
But think about Somerville parking, right? Yeah. You leave your car there idling for 2 seconds, you get a ticket. There must be like 400 people. Like, it seems that it's like Big Brother. It just instantly gives you a ticket.
When we studied it, we have parking all over.
There's plenty of parking here.
Nobody knows where it is.
But in Somerville, people are willing to pay.
Yes.
And they're willing to pay out the nose to park in Somerville.
Right.
And Somerville, like I said, when I moved from Somerville to here 10 years ago, I didn't necessarily think Somerville was really – and I like Somerville too, but I didn't think it was really necessarily, you know, head and shoulders above Flemington. I thought they were kind of even. And I thought it's going to come down to how are they managed and how do the people approach it. And unfortunately, there's – in my opinion, it's unfortunate that we've been stuck in this inertia where we can't move forward. And I'm not pointing fingers at any groups or people in particular, but there's certainly, you know, a need to pick a path and just follow it, you know?
I think one of the complexities we have is people cannot tell Flemington from Raritan Township. And as a result, they think we have everything we need because it's in Raritan Township, only a block or two from Flemington.
Right.
And, for instance, you need a drink, you can get a drink in a restaurant, but in Raritan Township,
exactly.
Not in downtown Flemington. So we went to Bluefish Grill, and Marilyn says, there's no wine. I said, I'll run down to Circle Liquors and get you a bottle of wine. I don't drink, but you know, it took a half hour to get down and get back. By the time that the dinner was out, you know, it was sort of an awkward evening. People think we have what we don't have, and some things that have happened haven't happened really in the right, in my mind, and that doesn't mean I'm right. But, for instance, we built a grocery chain right next to Kohl's over there. I'm trying to think what it's called.
Aldi?
Yeah, Aldi.
Mm-hmm.
Aldi is meant to be a high markup 7-Eleven along a highway on the way home. It was meant to be, I'm going to take 7-Eleven's place. There's more in the store. It's a very profitable chain. The brother owns Trader Joe's. They just went in different directions.
Yeah, yeah.
That Aldi should have been downtown here, not over there. It's in the wrong spot because people don't like to go into a mall. We need something to draw people downtown. And when I said, why didn't it come down? Phil said, because we didn't get the parking passed. You know, they needed 28 spots. And
well, look, I I'm a lawyer. I wanted to pull my hair out trying to get my porch redone in Flemington.
Right.
Because we live in the historic. Our house isn't historic, but we live in the historic section. And our porches started to become dilapidated, so you had to go before the historic, you know, board.
Right.
And I was grilled for 42 minutes. And I thought to myself, if I wasn't a lawyer, I don't know if I could have handled this kind of grilling, you know? So I can imagine it's hard to get anything done in this borough.
It is, and I think the Historic Society is doing its job, but I think at times we need overall direction that says we've got to mix it up a little, we've got to move forward and stay the same. And
they were trying to tell me which color the steps should be.
Oh, my goodness.
And I wasn't trying to go for, like, neon, you know, yellow.
Yeah, right.
I said, I shouldn't say this. Now my property taxes are going to increase again.
Well,
suddenly, the surprise inspection.
we had a woman who runs a real estate agency right here in downtown. She has 18 offices. And she was on – she did the blade science study. And she said, what blade science attempts you to do is go another block. They hang down. You say, I want to go see what's down there. We have a blade sign ordinance here that you can't have them. So we went through parking, we went through signage, we went through about six different things that we studied. And we said, you know, it's not so bad, it's just not well coordinated. Everyone was fire. Apparently we have a very strict fire code, as we should. But it's like sales prevention to get somebody a permit to open a store. So a lot of people gave up. So, and then you know what the other thing is? It's the unknown. You say there's like a civil war going over with this thing in downtown Flemington. Then maybe it'd be better to go to downtown Somerville and open a store. People just talk themselves out of coming here.
Well, you know, when I was doing the county's legal work, I remember they demolished, and it slightly involved the county of Somerset, but they demolished Doris Duke's mansion.
Yes.
And that just happened. Like, and to me, there's probably more historical.
Right.
Value to that than there is to maybe I'm wrong, but that, you know, it happened quickly, and part of it's because it's on private property and the nonprofit foundation wanted to do it, but now you have a property that's not really owned by anybody, not contributing anything to anybody for at least the 10 years I've been here, and there it sits. So if there's a value to it, then how come nobody's willing to buy it and pay for it? And if there's not a value to it, then we got somebody else who's willing to knock it down and rebuild it, then let's do it.
So I'm looking at your book. What year was this published?
It just came out within the last couple weeks.
So it's happily even after. That means things are supposed to be even at the end of a divorce.
It's a little whimsical, but yeah, it's more about a philosophy of, you know, you can either try to, you know, bludgeon your ex to death and hate right. each other forever and harm your children, or you can kind of try to be adults and move forward, you know, and maybe you find somebody else and you're happier, or maybe you're happier on your own. But, you know, what I see is a lot of good people, average people going through this process. And I think because the media and certain TV shows or movies make it seem like you should hate your ex, you know, it's almost like you're playing a part. Like, it's like a narrative. Like, well, this person's the reason why I'm not happy. It's got to be my ex's fault, you know? So, and look, I'm a novice. I'm only married 11 years. So I consider myself a novice on marriage. But I do see with my clients, I like to tell them from the start, you know, here's the options. If you want to do this, we'll be as aggressive as you want to be, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. And the results probably aren't going to be much better. And you might have your children as collateral damage. So what are you really doing here? And I think that's an important thing to get across to the general public. And it's part of the reason why I wrote this book.
So you gravitated to divorce, though. You said you were in part of you were the representative for this county seat at one point in time?
A deputy county council, okay. I was partner at a firm, but yeah.
And you did more non-matrimonial law, but gravitated. What made you wind up here at matrimonial as your primary?
Well, I clerked for a family law judge, and I worked for a divorce firm down near Princeton. So the early part of my career was almost entirely family law. And then I actually started to gravitate sort of away from it, because it was just so, you know, it felt like Sisyphus with a rock. Like, no matter what I tried to do for my clients, like, it was never enough, and the process was just ugly. And what I realized was that, you know, there's a certain way that things are done, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. And over the last few years, it's been more and more trying to get this philosophy down, only taking on certain clients, not taking on clients who, you know, have certain red flags to me. Not that they're not good people or not good clients. They're just not good clients for my partner, Lisa Stein Browning, or for me, because we're more solution focused. We want people who want to come in and be, you know, look, there's going to be emotion. I've had brilliant scientists who are still very emotional about the divorce.
Right.
But taking that and figuring out, what do? Do you have to meditate? Do you have to talk to a therapist on your own time? So when we talk together, it's focused on guiding them on the path to you know, how do you wrap up? How do you sell the house? What realtors are you going to use? You know, do you need an appraisal? Just common sense kind of things, rather than like, let's perseverate for an hour and say the same things over and over again about how upset we are at our ex, because that's just not productive. No. And at the rate I'm billing people per hour, it didn't feel, growing up in a blue collar background, it just didn't feel good, you know, the early part of my career doing some of those things. So now I can kind of do it, and I feel like I can kind of sleep at night, you know, because I feel like I'm doing the best I can for my clients, and we're trying to help people and help the local community and not have this stuff spill over. Because when I prosecuted, you see it spill over. We're into domestic violence issues and everything else, you know. So family division sort of like the first line of defense against some of the societal ills, you know.
Neat. It's a good outlook on things. So I know we've got two or three other matrimonial attorneys in downtown Flemington.
Oh, at least, yeah, for sure.
So there's enough for all. Mostly because it's a county seat.
Well, look, we're in one of the most, I think maybe the most saturated state for lawyers in the country. I think you have like one lawyer per everyone's going to move out. You have like one lawyer per like every block in New Jersey, you know? So, you know, it's, I was at 171 Main Street running from Rich Tice down and Greg Watts on the corner of Church and Main, which was nice because I could walk to work. But when I needed bigger space, we went out to the Countryside Plaza North, which is off 31, technically in Raritan Township, but at Flemington address, like everything else. And it's a really nice location. And it's, you know, I think the world of all the other divorce and family law, most of them at least, out here. And hopefully there's some room, you know, for Lisa and I to continue to do what we're doing as well.
Interesting. How did you and Lisa hook up? Did you work with each other before?
Yeah, so bar association and stuff, and then, you know, start going to lunches, and we realized we had a very similar mindset. So, I asked her if she wanted to come partner up, and she's only been with me for a few months, but it's been really great. And it's really nice to have somebody else you can go to and just say, hey, how would you handle this issue? Or have you ever seen this kind of thing come up in a case?
Right.
Whereas when you're solo, it's a little bit harder because you have mentors and friends you can rely upon, but they're not always in the same building, and sometimes you feel like you're bothering people. So that's been very nice.
Even with real estate, I have several woman clients as buyers or sellers that I feel wouldn't work with this gentleman. Here's a female attorney that you might be better matched with. So I would think the gender card helps a little at times.
it does seem like for some people when they call in, they'll say they prefer to work with the, you know, a male attorney or a female attorney.
Right.
I personally don't think it matters whatsoever, but to
either.
Some people it does. So if they feel that way, then you know it does work out, I guess, nicely in that sense.
That's sort of neat. I know Marilyn always prefers to work with men, and then I've worked, my doctor, my attorney, are both female. So she says, I wonder why that is. I said, I don't know, because it wasn't that I went out to choose them. I found them through professional organizations, and it's just worked. And whatever, you know, it's whatever floats your boat, as they say.
Yeah, it's the nice thing about what we're doing is, you know, we bring people in for a two-hour consult right off the bat, and we do charge for it, $250. But we're very, like, we're going to talk about everything we can. We're going to try and figure out from every angle. And then, you know, Lisa's collaboratively trained, which is a specific, you know, subset of divorce law.
Right.
We both have mediation training. But, you know, we can kind of say to them, you know, maybe this case is better for arbitration. Maybe this case is best in litigation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should go to a colleague who's a mediator. We'll refer you, and then you can come back, and we'll walk you through the divorce. So every case is kind of different, and a lot of it comes down to the personalities. And, you know, the court rules are always the same, but the personalities of the players are always very different, including the lawyers, you know. So our mission statement says we're not the sharks, we're the dolphins. We're not just going to go around biting things for no good reason, but we will be tough if we have to be, and we'll be protective the way.
So how do you find your business? I mean, I've not heard of you until you contacted me.
Oh, sure. Well,
I'm not looking for a divorce, so maybe.
Yeah. I'd say almost entirely making appearances on 100 in Chamber Radio.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
That's funny.
I guess part of it is, like you, a lot of business comes from Somerset County because I was out there the first 8 years of my career. More and more coming out of Hunterdon, referrals from other lawyers. I used to be a trustee of the Somerset County Bar Association. So I have a pretty wide network. But also the website, because we have a very comprehensive website. Sometimes you get people who call you, I read your articles on the website. You know, it's
good.
So it's like anything else, you need those people coming in from all different angles.
Right.
And, you know, for the first time this last year, we've actually spent a little bit of money on advertising with very mixed results. So I don't know if that's the answer. I was just talking on the program prior to this with Vicky about how, you know, the guerrilla marketing idea of getting out there, being more active in the community.
Yep.
And we're trying to do that. We have a scholarship for each of the local high schools. For a graduating senior, we're going to give $500 for them for future lawyer scholarship.
Okay.
So it has the Carl Taylor Law Future Lawyer Scholarship name, but it's also doing good for the community. It's helping people, you know, at least get
good
books for a semester at school. So,
I know I got first involved in the chamber in Hunterdon County. I was with Weichert at the time in Clinton. And Weichert joined, and the thing was put out that we've joined, and you can now attend all the functions under our membership. And I really got involved, head over heels with it. I started going. There's two or three leads groups. Used to be one down south. It's disappeared. But we do have one in Clinton. We have one in Flemington. They meet once a month. You go out and you meet maybe 20, 30 people. Every month's different people. Some same 10 of the same, and you know they ever float in and out.
Right.
And through that, I've met a lot of people I do one-on-ones with, and several divorce attorneys, lots of other things, attorneys for real estate, attorneys for other specific things. A lot of financial advisors, a lot of mortgage people. A lot of my business came from. So that's sort of a chamber thing. So it worked so well. Chris was doing a Leadership Hunterdon, and I said, well, tell me about it. I didn't realize it cost as much as it did, but it was a very interesting program. So for one day a month, 10 months of the year, you go through the county, you go through schools, you go through law, you go through hospitalization, you go through welfare. You get to know the county and its problems, and you get the work of 10 or 12 other people on a common problem. And at that point, which was 3 years ago, I knew everybody in Hunterdon County. Now, some of them moved on. Some of the ones have moved in. But I felt so much about it, I wanted to do the same thing in Somerset County. I found it was a totally different program, but I still got to meet everybody in the county, which was good. And I am currently in the Chamber of Commerce Hunterdon, Chamber of Commerce Somerset, Chamber of Commerce Basking Ridge, Chamber of Commerce and Warren, and I belong to several other groups around that are sort of high net worth groups that are guys dealing really pretty well above where the average person is thinking, and they're amazing people to work with. But real estate sort of fits. Everybody understands real estate. They're buying, selling, trading up, trading down, right-sizing, whatever the story may be. And I can't say a lot of my business, because the joke always used to be, well, divorce sells free houses. But I can't say that that happens, because I do meet people who just recently got divorced and are looking to move out. But it's not the preponderance of my business. Most of my business are families looking for houses, or people looking for the first house, or people looking to trade up. But I would say 10 or 15, 20% of my are divorces, but not as they're happening as typical. It's already over, or they're already filed for divorce. It's not like they're just getting started.
Yeah, I think it's easier in a lot of circumstances to have the divorce first and then sell the house. Because then you don't have to worry about quit claim deeds or any of those kinds of issues of is there still an interest in the property. Or if somebody wants to buy another property, then it really becomes an issue with having to get the quit claim deed for the subsequent property. Right. And you can't force a sale. The case law is pretty clear. You can't really force someone to sell a house, you know, a couple to sell their house during the divorce. There's a case called Randazzo that says you can, but it's like very difficult to force it. So a lot of times you have people sitting there until the divorce is finalized, and then they can agree upon who's the realer. Because I don't want your you recommend Joe. Well, I'm not going to go with Joe then. I'll have to go with somebody neutral, you know.
And you just get to pick one. Okay, those two are out.
Yeah, so it's a pick out of a hat, you know. Yeah. So that's some of the stuff. You know, like I remember my first year. Every divorce lawyer has a story, but like my first year practicing law, my client goes, he has the jar of change, and I want to file a motion for the jar of change. I'm like, well, how much money do you think's in there? And she's like, well, I don't know, as he's got possession of it, but you know, maybe like $500. And I'm like, well, it's going to cost about $1,500 to file a motion, you know, the legal fees and everything. Probably doesn't make sense. Let's just deal with it later. No. I want to do the jar of change. We got to do the motion. So that to me is when I talk to my clients. And back then I wasn't as experienced, obviously, as my first year. Now I'll say my clients like, look, what are you nuts? Like we're not going to file a motion. We're not going to spend good money after bad. Like we're going to save. We're going to keep our powder dry for where it really counts, fighting for custody of the kids.
It should be an amicable thing, but you've got to get over the emotions, and sometimes the emotions last right up to the end. I mean, I've been through a divorce. I've watched other people go through a divorce. My kids have been through divorces. It's just the hell.
Yeah, it's not easy ending anything, you know.
Nobody ever gets married thinking they're going to get divorced.
Yeah, and it's very unruly, you know. You have to also stay there a lot of times during the divorce.
There's not enough money.
And sometimes that inflames things because it's like, hey, maybe I didn't always agree with like your parenting style, but now that you told me you're having an affair and you want to get divorced, now I really hate your parenting style,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of that, but to me, it's like how can you have people use these outlets, you know, therapists or whatever it might be. Like for me, you know, I like to go hiking or get outside if I feel stressed out. I don't do it enough, but if I'm feeling really stressed out about my job or something, that's where I want to be. But it's different for every person. But sometimes when you're going through a divorce, people don't take care of themselves that way. And then and then it builds up, and then you have people who spend, you know, $30,000, $40,000, middle-class people, for a divorce. And that's just, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You know, right, but usually they have to split up. That's ridiculous.
But at least the house, you know, in 2009 when I came out, it was hard because everyone's dividing their debt. The houses are underwater. We're talking about short sales. At least now the market's better, you know, Joe, where it's like, well, we can take the equity from the home and we'll divide it 50-50.
It depends. When somebody calls me up, the first thing I ask them is, what year did you buy your house? Because you bought it between 05 and 2010, a lot of cases you're still underwater.
Especially 05. I mean,
So I'm looking, I'm combining your thought process with mine, and I'm saying, what are the biggest obstacles we've got? Right now, our biggest obstacle is finding more inventory. We're listing houses where people are moving up. And I just read an article this morning, as a matter of fact, I put it on my blog post, that, you know, people are starting to say, look, the house is too big, the kids are gone. The house doesn't fit me anymore. I need one floor, it's two or three floors. The kids are gone and we got divorced. The house is now too big for both of us. We both want to move on. So a lot of people are moving around, and I help people do that. I've got a fellow who's selling a big house and moving into a smaller townhouse because they just don't need it. And that's admirable because they know what they want to do. Most people don't know what they want to do. And I really appreciate it when somebody comes to me and they have a plan, because that's all this work I've got to do. But we also get into a lot of, I'm just finishing one up over in Somerset County where grandpa died. And the house is full of grandpa's stuff. And okay, I got to get somebody to clean the house out. Now I've got all the stuff out. My God, the walls are falling down. The whole place needs to be painted. The septic's 200 years old. The well is shot. The oil tank's underground. You know, all of these things have got to be fixed before we can sell the house. So sometimes it's a project. Other times it's one, two, three. And Hunterdon County hasn't done a good job, in my mind, of 55-plus housing, which may be good because we have less 55-plus people than we used to. The second generation of 55-plus aren't as big as the first. So a lot of people who own 55-plus are having a difficult time selling it because there's not that many people to buy it from. But the only 55-plus, we've got something over here in DeVore Court, we've got Flemington Fields, and we've got a couple of around... We do have some income and age restricted, like the one right on Church Street. And that you've really got to be, if both of you are getting Social Security, you're probably not going to qualify for that. You really got to be pretty low income, pretty constrained.
The one in the corner of Broad and Church there?
Yeah, I think it's Herman something. It's got a German name to it. But it's really nice. If you've not gotten in, go in. Just knock on the door and introduce yourself. They'll show you around. And they've got all sorts of things going on. But if you earn more than $40,000 between the two of you, it's probably difficult to get in there. And two people collecting Social Security is probably earning more than that. So we have pretty high level of income constraint because you can earn $37,000 and still collect welfare in Hunterdon County as a single, $50,000 as a couple. Family of four is like $77,000. Where if you go into the middle sexes and the unions, that's like half that. So we don't, we have our problems. But our problems aren't as big as you get closer to New York. Somerset has more problems. Middlesex and Union have more problems than Somerset. And most of them are on the inner city kind of thinking. I mean, Somerset has five towns that are more than 40% below the poverty level. That's an 11,000 per capita of working. That's pretty low. And those are same towns that we're building luxury high-rises in. So you've got a nice mix of things going on. It's almost like it's regentrifying itself.
Well, I don't know if it's still true or not, but I remember a few years ago I read that the average income per county, I think like Beverly Hills, you know, California is like right. Number two, and then like Hunterdon County and Somerset County are in the top 10 in the country.
We're number one and two now because California fell off the cliff.
So you know, it's interesting because, you know, you think of places like Beverly Hills or Princeton or certain places you think of as being, like, well-heeled or whatever the phrase is. But, you know, I think what it is here is it's a lot of people who are pretty, you know, you don't have, like, the very ultra, you know, rich or anything, but you have a lot of people who make good livings, live close enough to New York or Philly to have jobs and commute. So there is, you know, you would think there would be a good active housing market because of that.
Our challenge is on both ends. Our challenge is we don't have enough starter homes, so people leave or go into apartments. Even our apartments are expensive. And we don't have enough, we have too many senior homes, or not senior, but higher-end homes. So they're very tough to sell. We sell four houses over $700,000 in a typical month in Hunterdon County. We sell 20 over $1 million in Somerset County. It's a totally different county. It's much higher, high-end. How do we fix it? I don't know how you fix it until we sort out this affordable housing thing, income-restrained affordable housing. Free market affordable housing is not going to get built until, in my mind, affordable housing itself gets resolved. And right now, I had the four mayors of Clinton Township, Reddington, Raritan on a dais because I'm on the board of realtors, and we talked to the realtors about what's happening in affordable housing. And everybody is sort of doing what they have to do to get this done and putting up a lot of units. But everybody's saying, but we can't see past 2025, which is only 6 years away. That's not like it's 15 like it used to be. And in most cases, I think they're doing it because they have to do it, hoping that things will change and they don't have to do everything that they're doing.
There's also a lot of workarounds with the credit. I don't know a lot about that area of the law, but I think there's some certain workarounds with the credits. You know, so, yeah, I think you're right that there's – it's sort of an area of the law that's still not very well understood and kind of still – there's a lot of important decisions being made.
Right.
You know, and I guess it goes back to originally, like – Mount Holly, you know,
I think. Well, Mount Holly turned
one
into
two or whatever. So yeah, I don't know much about that era.
1972, and then there was an affordable housing, or what was it called? It was COA, Council on Affordable Housing.
How they're interpreting all these changes.
But now the management and the direction is all gone. It's just enforcement. It's execution by the courts, and the courts are politically appointed. So, okay, you could argue that most of the people in political appointments are from previous administrations, but it's changing with the politics. And we really need direction because it needs to be rethought. One of the arguments that came out of this is that we're building affordable housing in areas that don't need affordable housing built in it. So as a result, you'll take it, 110 counties, good general. We're number one per income per household in the nation right now at $110,000 per household. We probably could absorb more affordable housing into our county, but our county affordable housing has to be built where it is water, sewer, and natural gas. Most of Hunter County doesn't have that. We definitely don't have transportation, and affordable housing needs transportation in many cases. But we're putting up more than we need because we have to satisfy this. So what will happen? Well, the argument is what was designed to do will happen. We're going to integrate the financial classes. And not necessarily good, not necessarily bad, but we'll have more moderate to low-income people in Hunter County than we used to. I don't know what you make of that. It may mean that the people that can afford to live here will go live somewhere else. Good example, 5,700 millionaires left New Jersey last year. Lots of reasons. But there are people who can afford to live wherever the hell they want. And they said it's just the cost of living in New Jersey.
The taxes.
Yeah, the taxes.
You go to a state like Delaware or Florida,
right,
where there's no state taxes or whatever.
So it's complex, says somebody. In one day. You know, it's a complex situation. I've been talking to Carl Taylor now for the last half hour, 40 minutes. Let me give you how you can reach him. He's located right here in Raritan Township in the Countryside Plaza, which is where Anita's Angels, and there's an IT concern in there. But it's right across some Hi-Tran transportation if Wharf 31 gets a little on the Finn side. Carl's phone number is 908-237-3096, 908-237-3096. And you can just go to Carl Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, Law, and look up all the things he's done.
Yeah, or the even better website now would be, this is an old card I gave you, is okay. MyNJDivorceLawyer.com.
Oh, neat. That is easier.
So thanks, Joe.
We got about 3 minutes left. What haven't we talked about that you were hoping to talk about?
No, it's been very interesting. We've been all over the place. we'll just come back to, you know, we're trying to you know, build a practice out here that kind of gives back to the community, that treat our clients with respect. Hopefully we get, you know, good word of mouth from that.
Good.
And, you know, as somebody who lives, you know, a couple blocks away from here, I definitely hope that the borough can sort out its issues in terms of the political climate and kind of figure out what needs to be done to help Flemington. Because I think we could all agree it could be better, you know.
It could be better. We need to turn it from a thrift store to a town that's got a couple of Starbucks in it. And when you do that, that means it's flourishing. And Flemington.
Well, look at the Grill Shack. I mean, that was a good restaurant.
Yeah.
I was surprised when it closed down, you know. Even the problem is, it's hard to, if you don't have things around it that people go to,
right.
Unless you're working here, it's kind of, you know, I'll go somewhere where there's, you know, easier parking or wherever it might be, you know.
Well,
like, I love a movie theater down here. I mean, how awesome would that be?
We fought for that. It's just, it's physical. It's got to justify itself, and it didn't. We had one, you may not remember, right where they built the bank across from where Home Depot is on that side.
Was that closed about 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I remember I grew up with that in a movie theater in my town. I love movies. And I moved here. I'm like, oh, good, there's a movie theater. Like, yeah. Now it's closing down.
Uh-huh.
And there was also that place that served decent, like 50s-style like burgers and stuff. Wasn't there a place like that?
There was.
And then you had the Borders, right? I mean, you had a lot of places that have, and then you have the outlets, which when I walk my dog through that, it's like ghost town.
It is ghost town, because we were looking at that last year to hold a meeting. We're going to bring the governor in and have here's what's available in Flemington, try to get some people and builders interested in it. And there's not like only four occupied stores. I might be exaggerating, but if there's 10, there's a lot. And I still go in there because there's a Brooks Brothers in there, but I can't think of another reason to go in there. So if Brooks Brothers didn't send me these $10 off coupons every, and I add them up, and it's a pair of slacks, I'm going to go get a pair of slacks. Right? Flemington and Hunterdon County are great places to live. And it's a little difficult to sit here and earn a living for most people. If you've got a professional practice like yourself or mine, it's a little easier. But it's generally a $20 an hour environment in Hunterdon County. And I can verify that because the only employment agency in Hunterdon County has a place for somebody for more than $22 an hour since they've been in existence. So that's a 40,000. There's nothing wrong with that. Those are the key holders to our stores. They're the craftsmen. They're the auto mechanics. But we're trying to build a Pack Hunter. If you haven't gone to that, go to it this year. It's in June where we bring these technology people in. This thirst for companies to develop homes in Hunterdon. And Mark Salico sits across the hall from me here, and I are in continuous argument with friends, but continuous arguments like, oh, yeah, you bring jobs and they will come. I said, where are they going to live? We don't have apartments they can afford. You have to earn $50,000 to afford a $1,250 apartment. We don't have $1,250 apartments. Most of those houses you can buy. Mm-hmm. We are at our end. So I'm going to give Carl one more shot. Say goodbye. Tell them how to reach you.
MyNJDivorceLawyer.com. Joe, thanks so much for having me. It was great talking with you.
Thank you. And his phone number, 908-237-3096. He's got a great book called Happily Even After. Highly recommend it, although I haven't read it. And he is he's local. He's easy to talk to, as I've discovered. My name is Joe Peters, and I do real estate. I'm going to play my commercial one more time. And we'll be back next week with our monthly Here's What's Happening in Hunterdon County Real Estate Wise. Thanks for tuning in.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Once again, Joe Peters. We'll see you next Tuesday for a real estate update. Have a great week. Thank you.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Severe storms brought lots of rain, hail, and tornadoes to parts of the Ohio Valley, particularly around Dayton, killing at least one person. Ohio Republican Governor Mike DeWine credits local media for warning residents and preventing mass casualties.
When something like this happens at night, it's even more frightening. But news media did a great job covering this, giving people, you know, whatever warning they could give.
House Majority Leader Democrats Steny Hoyer is blasting Republicans who twice now have blocked the passage of a long-awaited disaster relief bill.
Frankly, I cannot understand why any member would object to giving relief to so many millions of our citizens who have been badly damaged by natural disasters.
Republican Tom Massey, who voted against the bill, says it's all Nancy Pelosi's fault because she sent everyone home a day early last week. This is USA Radio News.
Hi. I'm Captain Obvious, and every day thousands of people book trips on Hotels.com. Trips you will later hate like. What's a hate like? It's when you like Becky's picture of another perfect waterfall, even though you kind of hate it. It's not that you hate Becky, it's that you hate that she's there, and you're at work listening to Lisa talk about her alleged food allergies. Don't hate like Becky's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, get rewarded.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry. Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
The latest edition of the Journal of the American College of Cardiology has a report on the dangers of flavored e-cigarettes. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
Researchers report flavored e-liquids used in vapes can cause harm to blood vessels that can perhaps lead to cardiovascular diseases. A number of flavors were tested, with cinnamon being the most potent, followed closely by menthol. Electronic cigarettes have experienced a tremendous growth in recent years due to the number of people trying to switch off of tobacco. The article is entitled, "The Adverse Vascular Effects of E-Cigarettes, Smoke Without the Fire." I'm John Clemens.
Home prices across the United States are continuing to rise. According to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index, prices rose 3.7% in March. Now, that's down from